Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
The Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is one of the best of the best of the best, Blair Horner, Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Welcome back, old friend.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, the Moreland Act. The governor appoints a commission, and they're supposed to look behind every little nook and cranny, and they're supposed to come up and tell us whether the government is dysfunctional or not. And they're supposed to, if they see anything that's really bad, hand it over to the district attorneys and let them prosecute the evildoers, politicians, and others. So what do you make of it?
Well, the Moreland Act Commission is technically the Commission to Investigate Public Corruption. That's the name of it. You're right. It's set up by the governor, and it actually has been deputized by the attorney general, which makes this a little bit different than other commissions.
Sure.
Deputized by the attorney general as deputy attorneys general, so they can actually issue subpoenas and get people to react differently than they could if they were purely the Moreland Act Commission.
And specifically to the legislature.
That's right. And that's one of the legal disputes right now is between the executive and legislative branches over the scope of the Moreland Act Commission's inquiry. The legislature is arguing that the executive branch does not have authority to go investigate what's going on in the legislative branch. You know, the argument is, really hinges now on whether or not Schneiderman's powers allow them to do that. And, you know, in the past, it was a slam dunk that the Moreland Commission did not have the authority to go after the legislature. Specifically, it could go after agencies through which the legislature operated, like the Board of Elections. But with Schneiderman's powers deputizing them as attorneys general, I think that argument is it's not so clear anymore, that's for sure.
So what did they come up with, this Moreland Act?
Well, they came up with a preliminary report, a 98-page report, looking soup to nuts, basically at the sort of the policy weaknesses of Albany. The campaign finance, State Board of Elections.
Pay-to-play.
Pay-to-play was a big aspect of it. And they came out with a preliminary report, none of which really is earth-shattering in the sense of what it was they were talking about.
Didn't make the front page of the Times.
Well, when you put it out at 6 o'clock on a Monday night, it's hard to make it unless it has to do with some sort of cataclysm like a meteor hitting the planet. So I don't know why they did that, of course. That is only a question that the well-paid public relations arm of the Cuomo administration can tell you. But they put it out at 6 o'clock on a Monday night. And the report, though, sort of identifies, you know, the sort of pegs a pay-to-play culture in Albany. It's consistent with the report that came out 25 years ago, the Moreland Commission under then Governor Mario Cuomo, headed by the dean of the law school at Fordham,
John Furyk.
Basically, same kinds of recommendations. They had some new wrinkles in it. So, for example, the new Moreland Act report that came out on Monday identified this woman who was an attorney at the Board of Elections who got canned for doing too good of a job. She was the woman on the assembly line that was making the rest of them look bad, so they got rid of her. Really, that story all by itself just says it all about why the State Board of Elections should be just blown up and reconstituted in some other fashion.
Let's talk about that for 1 minute.
Sure.
The legislature, of course, is responsible for creating the Board of Elections, and they made sure they did it the right way, equal number of Democrats and Republicans and the right people serving on it. But it's seen in New York by those people who watch these kinds of things as really a statewide disgrace that they're not doing their job. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, I couldn't say it any better. I mean, this report is about a damning an indictment of the State Board of Elections as I've ever seen. It's brutal, and it's it flays the Board of Elections.
They're in place, basically, to do nothing.
That's right. It is structurally designed to fail. It has equal number of Democrats and Republicans.
Who, by the way, wink at each other every once in a while.
Right. The report goes into great detail about how complaints against Republicans are sent to the Republican lawyers on the staff. The complaints against Democrats go to the Democratic lawyers on staff, all with the intended outcome of sweeping everything under the rug. And so basically they do absolutely nothing. And that's why the campaign finance system is so one of the reasons why it's so horrible. We had identified over 100,000 violations of the campaign finance system, and the Board of Elections really has done nothing about any of them.
How would you like to be a Board of Elections person and hear this stuff over and over and over again? You're no good, you're no good, you're no good.
Well, and now it's
you must really like money.
Well, or you're paid for the party.
Yeah.
I mean, you're an apparatchik in the party, and you're there to protect the party's interests. So that's how they view it. But there was this public hearing in New York City a few weeks ago, and now this report really that got inside the Board of Elections and described a system that was my worst-case scenario in terms of how I always viewed it. And I mean, Nyberg's been calling for the dismantling of the Board of Elections since 1991, so it doesn't come as a great shock. But to see people get fired because they're trying to do a good job, it's sort of staggering and should really be a clarion call that this system has to go.
Yeah. So do things have to hit rock bottom, in your opinion, in order to make for change?
No, I think we're below rock bottom. I mean, we're now eating into the mantle of the...
fracking.
That's right. That's political hydrofracking to find any sort of molecules of goodness left in the system, this rotten system. It really is going to take, I think, the governor... All roads come back to the governor.
No, all roads come back to the governor. This is really good. Go ahead.
I mean, he is the guy who set this up. This is his commission.
Why did he set it up?
Well, you know, it's a very good question. Depending on who you talk to, it was either because he was frustrated with these pay-to-play culture of Albany, or it was at a point of, you know, peak because he couldn't get the legislature to do what he wanted. And he's been rattling the saber ever since he started as
governor. Well, I take some exception to what you've just said. There is a school of thought that says that the governor, rather than wanting to get all of this stuff done, may want the issue itself, the issue. I'm against corruption. You're for corruption. I'm appointing a commission. But when the commission starts to do too much, says Ken Lovett, in other words, they're issued a subpoenas that come a little too close to the governor, his people are dispatched to say to the commission, this very commission we've been talking about, no, don't subpoena the real estate people. If that's true, it would indicate that maybe he doesn't really want change.
Well, I tell you, when I looked through the report, I was sort of surprised there really was nothing on the executive branch in there. There is one part of the report where they sort of go through a litany of all of the scoundrels that have been bounced from office or sent off to prison. And there's not a mention of anyone in the executive branch. And there's certainly been some executive branch scandals. I mean, it's not like this executive branch has been. And while the Committee to Save New York as an entity was created at least with the blessing of the governor and was not an independent expenditure campaign, and the report goes through independent expenditure campaigns, which for your listeners are efforts really to sort of influence the electoral process, but not by giving money directly to candidates or the parties, it's sort of to do it on your own. The Committee to Save New York is made up of a bunch of wealthy individuals, real estate developers, and others with business before the government. Typically, if you believe this report that Albany's a pay-to-play culture, you would at least be suspicious as to what they were paying for when they forked over the money.
Now, well, let me stop you for one second, Blair. Isn't it also true that the governor, maybe I'm naive, has a campaign account with $30 million in it?
Yeah, well, you're not naive. And the vast, overwhelming majority of it comes in chunks of $10,000 or more. New York has the highest campaign contribution limits of any state that has limits in the country.
$10,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, for your listeners, you know, I can't see you all, but raise your hand if you could write a check for $10,000 to anyone. And by the way, if you could, send it to Alan.
All true.
And so, you know, who does that? Who writes $10,000 campaign contributions? By and large, are people that have business before the government. Now, we don't know. Again, this is a preliminary report of the Moreland Act Commission. We don't know what else they're looking at. The report consistently identifies areas where there are ongoing investigations. And so we don't really know what is being necessarily things that may have been omitted here, maybe still under consideration. But it is notable in the report that there's no examination of the executive branch, which sort of, I think, lends some credence to the Daily News' series, basically saying that the executive was sort of calling the tune for the Moreland Commission, although they deny that.
Now, Blair Horner, there's a key recommendation, which not every commissioner, but most of them, agreed with, which was that we should have a New York City type of matching fund, the same way New York City does. And some of the commissioners didn't like that, but most of them did. Is it a good idea?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the New York City campaign finance system is a system, just so your listeners know, where you can supplement small donor contributions with public resources. So the way it works is for every dollar in campaign contributions that a candidate in New York City gets from a small donation, under no more than $175, is matched with $6 in public resources. Now, I can't do this math quickly in my head, but I think everybody gets the point.
Sure.
In other words, 6/7 of all of the money raised and these from these small individual donors, not interest groups, not unions, not corporations.
And up to a certain amount.
Up to $175 gets matched with public resources. What does that do? That allows average people to run for office, people that are not necessarily tied in with wealthy individuals or creatures of the political parties can run, mount a credible campaign in New York City. Doesn't mean they're going to win, and it doesn't really limit anyone else's ability to spend money outside of this voluntary
So Bloomberg,
system.
For example,
That's
spent
right.
his own money. He did not opt into this matching system.
And he won.
He spent anyone.
That's
yeah.
right. Okay. Three times. He spent a lot of money, overwhelmed the public financing candidates. So, but the recommendation in here is basically along the lines that I just argued. There's not a whole lot you can do in a post-Citizens United system to change campaign finance practices. But if you create a system of a voluntary system of public funding for candidates, you will draw into the system new candidates, create hopefully a more competitive environment, and then in some ways, most importantly, create a relationship where candidates are talking to average people to get the solicitation out for the small donation. Right now in Albany's dialing for dollar system, what makes more sense? One call for a $10,000 check or 100 calls for a $100 check? In the public financing system, you're forced as a candidate, if you choose to opt in, to engage with small individual donors. And in that way, you create a different relationship with the public at large, which is a good thing. It doesn't solve all the problems of pay-to-play because it's a post-Citizens United world. In other words, individuals and corporations and union can spend as much as they want. Can't really do anything about that, although the commission wants that information disclosed, which it really isn't now.
Yes, but by the way, just let me say this, Blair. When the legislature came up with a revised ethics law last year, I got hell because I was still complaining because instead of, okay, lawyer, who are your people? Tell us between this amount and that amount how much you got. I screamed. I said, just tell us the amount. Why does it have to be between $10,000 and so-and-so dollars? And this report substantiated my idea on this whole thing when I was critical. Now, let me ask you this, Blair. When the legislature is confronted with all of these proposed recommendations, what are they likely to do?
Well, they're going to do everything humanly possible not to do anything. And ignoring that this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to actually get something done, that there should be no turning away, that Albany's pay-to-play culture now has been thoroughly documented and vetted by an independent panel of people. And it will all come down now to the governor making it happen. The governor has to use his bully pulpit, use his vast skill as an elected official and politician, which he does have, to try to change the political landscape to get something done. He did this on other issues. You saw it with the SAFE Act on gun control. You saw it with gay marriage. When he marshals his resources and try to make something happen, he can run a very credible effort. This whole thing now will turn on whether or not he can force the legislature to take up meaningful reforms. Now, that doesn't mean that all of the things that are in this will get done. Rarely does that happen. And particularly when you have a report that is looking at the problem and it's sort of a comprehensive response, there's a lot of proposals in here. It goes from public financing to changing the bribery statute. There's a lot of stuff in here, but it's up to the governor to make this happen. He is the person who initiated this thing. He's the person who put this together, and it's now going to be up to him to quarterback the reform movement to get something done.
What's a member item? I know what it is, but I'm asking you for our listeners, what's a member item and what recommendations is the commission making about that?
Well, the member item is a term, there's an actual technical term for the spending that's put in the budget specifically at the request of an individual legislator. It used to have a code in the budget so you could tell where they were. There were 007 codes, which I thought was sort of hilarious. That was the code in the budget. If you saw that, those three numbers, you knew it was a member item. You didn't know who it was from, but you knew it was a member item. Now, member items also can be beyond that. There are now pots of money in the budget where the money's doled out subject to a memorandum of understanding between the executive and the legislative branches. You don't have as much disclosure, but effectively the same thing occurred. So what the commission talks about is having a, you know, if you're going to have that system, if you're going to have that system.
Just let me interrupt for a second. And with the idea on a member item is you got a pot of money. Every legislator, virtually every legislator, gets to direct some of that money. As we used to say in baseball, a player to be named later. You know, you got your money. Where are you going to spend it? There are some controls on it because it got real ugly.
That's right.
When some legislators were doing really stupid things with the money.
Well, it was very bad. Actually, the first guy to really sort of force this change on the issue was then Attorney General Andrew Cuomo. As soon as he came into office, he created a task force within the Attorney General's office to review all the member items. And that led to some significant changes in terms of having like a paper trail. I mean, it used to be that there was no review of the by the agencies of the money going out the door to these member items. It's completely a Wild West system. The legislator got the money. They could spend it however they wanted. Nobody checked. Now, that system changed. And then starting under Governor Patterson, no new money has been added to that technical system. But there are other pots of money. And that was sort of where I was going. Yeah. There are other ways that legislators can direct the money. Basically, the commission says that if you're going to have that kind of system, you need to have a very detailed accounting of who's behind the direction of the money for whatever the project is, as well as significant oversight of how it gets spent.
What are the chances of anything happening as a result of this?
Well, we have history to look at. The FERC Commission came out with 20-plus reports over 3 or 4 years of work, and virtually none of those recommendations were enacted. And they made the case. They identified corruption. They identified scandals. They put out reports. They held hearings. And the problem at that time is then Governor Cuomo's political power was on the wane.
That's Mario Cuomo.
Cuomo. And now we have a Governor Cuomo who arguably is at the peak of his political power, and he's up for re-election this year, just as he and all the legislators are. This is maximum leverage for him to try to get something done.
Let's talk bribery for a second. Plunkett of Tammany Hall says, you know, honest graft and dishonest graft.
Right.
This report is correct in that they make the case that dishonest bribery goes on all the time in the legislature. Nobody's going to give you money if they don't want something back, or very few people are.
And this is not a charitable enterprise.
No. It's just like you travel abroad and you go to one of the big markets. Yeah, it's just like a market. That's what it is here. You want a piece of pig, I'll give you some money. And the members seem to be unashamed about that. So how do you shame them?
Well, you know, the largest question about this whole enterprise is how do you get the people who are winners in the current political system to change the rules of the system that they win?
Sure. You got 211 members of the legislature. We got here under the old rules. Now you want us to cut our own throats?
That's exactly
right. We're not going to do it.
And you know some of them will lose.
Yeah.
And they know that, too. So they don't like that. That's why, you know, I mean, the redistricting process with the governor was another one of the governor's big reforms. Turns out, in our opinion, to be largely a sham. The ethics proposal that passed early on was, you know, gave a legislative veto over Jacobs' investigations of the legislative branch, similar to the State Board of Elections gridlock, where you can't really look at anybody. I mean, the basic question is, how do you change it? Well, you have these wise men and women that have reviewed the process and have come up with a report that says Albany's a pay-to-play culture. It really comes down to political will and power.
But is there anybody, Blair Horner, who doesn't know that it's a pay-to-play culture? That's the thing. I ask my students, what do your parents think of the legislature? They're all a bunch of crooks. You know, I mean, it's not as if this isn't a widely known thing. The real question is, let's assume Andrew Cuomo does really mean it and wants to use his bully pulpit. What does he say to people? Call your legislator and tell him, you know, you better wise up because we don't like what you're doing.
Well, he has to have a thoughtful, you know, comprehensive agenda that attacks the problems in campaign finance and the ethics law, which is really largely ignored in this report, and changing enforcement so that there are real cops on the beat. It's not easy. Obviously, if it was easy, the system would have already changed. His dad would have done it 25 years ago. So it's not easy. There's a potential for a political loss, which is, you know, that a legislator or an elected official views the same way Superman views kryptonite.
Sure.
You know, it's like, that's the worst thing that could happen. But I don't see how the governor gets off the hook on this. He created the commission. He ran in 2010 saying he's going to clean up Albany.
He also ran in 2010 saying he was going to make them draw their districts fairly, and he reneged on that, as you made a point.
And I mean, he's going to argue that he got reform passed. But he's got this report. He's up for re-election. They're all up for re-election. They all have to go back to their constituents and say, yes, you read about all these bums, and no, we didn't do anything about it. So they're going to have to, I think they're going to try to say they did something about
it. Let's take a guy like Jeff Klein, who is the leader of that rump faction of four legislators, Democratic legislators, allegedly, who have combined with the Republicans to keep the Republicans in power. Now, those people in the Bronx who elected Jeff Klein are Democrats. What? they rose up in unison to say, you're supporting the Republican agenda in the New York State Senate? Call me cynical, call me Ishmael, call me anything you want. I just don't think the sleeping giant's ready to wake up yet.
Ishmael, you might be right. but you asked me how does this technically all work? I mean, that's the only, there's only one play, and it's the governor has to make it. This is his commission. He is the one who said he was going to clean up Albany. It's not cleaned up. His commission has proven that it's not cleaned up.
Well, is it enough for him to say, Blair Horner, is it enough for him to say, I tried, at least give me credit for that, while those bums are over there resisting?
We'll see.
I really need it cleaned up.
If he doesn't offer a blueprint and doesn't use his political might to get anything accomplished, then he can certainly say he tried, but people will write stories and everything else saying he didn't. Now, you know, maybe he doesn't care. Frankly, I mean, that's entirely possible. He believes that the public is like your students' parents. They all think they're a bunch of bums. There's nothing you can do to make the system any better. That's the heart of the cynicism that is really the foundation for why nothing ever changes. Politicians don't believe they pay a political price for not fixing Albany. So that's the calculation, right? The calculation is, well, we'll just take the best.
But we have to remember how the governor got here, too. He got here under the existing system.
That's right. That's right. And he got here because his predecessors were ensnared in scandal. So what do you do? Do you assume that you can sort of dodge the bullet and sort of make happy talk and get nothing done and then assume that no one will care? That's the cynical analysis that will lead everyone to say they're going to want to do things, but some magic.
You get a half a loaf, for example, for shame.
Or a half of a crumb.
Let's take, if they've been convicted of a terrible crime, let's take their pensions away while they're in prison. Oh, they'll pass that. Maybe.
Well, I mean, there's lots of things. Look, you could cobble together reforms here. There's a lot of stuff to cover here. There's a lot of stuff on the waterfront. We'll have to see what happens. I mean, I don't want to predict what will happen because history in this area is absent someone, you know, committing suicide in the kitchen with a butcher knife.
Even that.
Well, although you got the New York City system as a result of that.
Uh-huh.
And you got term limits.
In
New York City. Because of a huge scandal that lawmakers there felt compelled to deal with. In Albany, the ripple effect of that scandal led to the Fira Commission, in addition to some no-show job allegations against legislators in Albany. That sort of swept Albany along, but Albany ended up not doing anything. They created the, it was a classic response, created commission, dodged the bullet, play for time, everybody forgets about it.
And put the report on the shelf where gray dust will,
that's the shelf.
Will land on it, right.
Well, the difference, though, is, I mean, the governor, the lesson he learned, apparently, from his father, he pushed to have this report come out very quickly. I mean, the report's out before the findings are out.
Ah, but I have another theory. It's a possibility that has been raised. He let the genie out of the bottle and then said, holy smokes, you know, we've done this. They're subpoenaing people. They're going after people. Maybe it would be better if we just had another report on the shelf.
Well, Ishmael, you might be right. But this report did come out within 11 months of the next election. And so this, unlike the other reports, which came out years after the problem occurred.
Right.
This report is coming out within months of the most recent scandal. And the way things are going, there'll be more. If Preet Bharara has his way, there'll be more. And I think legislators know that they are definitely playing with fire. And I think the governor knows it, too.
Yeah.
That if they fail to respond in any meaningful way, and if the governor thinks that purely having the commission issue a report lets him off the hook, I think he's playing with fire, too.
I noticed that your glasses are sort of, are those sunglasses you have on now?
No.
Well,
they are rose tinted.
They're rose colored.
Well, how else could I work at Nyberg? Ishmael, how can I continue to work at Nyberg?
You're way ahead of me. Our guest is the incredible Blair Horner, who has done so much in this area of public ethics and corruption and is doing a great job with the New York Public Interest Research Group. You know, you hear Nyberg and you think Blair Horner. And Blair, thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you're back real soon.
Anytime.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.